What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Preliminary tests show Omicron can evade some vaccine protections. Plus, crypto bosses head to Capitol Hill as governments weigh regulation, and changing gears in Europe's economic engine as Angela Merkel leaves power.
It's certainly an end of an era. Germany is at the cusp of a great change economically, politically, geopolitically.
It is Wednesday, December 8th. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Lab tests in South Africa show that the Omicron variant can partially evade protections from vaccines. Scientists found that the Pfizer vaccine produced 1/40th the amount of antibodies against Omicron compared to its performance against the original strain of COVID-19. That's a reduction, but Maria Van Kerkhove from the World Health Organization says it does not mean the variant can entirely escape the vaccine.
Some of the mutations within Omicron confer some potential immune escape, which means the vaccines may not be as effective. But the vaccines that we have are incredibly effective at preventing severe disease and death.
The U.S. House has overwhelmingly passed a $778 billion defense policy and budget bill. It authorized more money than President Biden asked for, and it greenlights funding to create a commission on the war in Afghanistan, pay raises for troops, and money for new ships and aircraft. The National Defense Authorization Act also creates a new special trial council for crimes in the military, including sexual assault. But victims' advocates say it's insufficient because it continues to allow commanders to influence prosecutions. Amazon Web Services went down for several hours Tuesday. The outage hit thousands of businesses that rely on the cloud computing provider, including Ticketmaster and Netflix, according to the tracker Down Detector. Amazon has identified the root cause of the issue but did not respond to questions about how many of its customers were affected. And China Evergrande is possibly headed toward default after failing to make payments due on U.S. dollar bonds. Sources say the property developer missed Monday's deadline to pay $82.5 million. Meanwhile, shares in Cajun Group were halted before the trading day in Hong Kong, with the Chinese developer saying the stock was suspended pending the release of inside information. Last week, Cajun failed to pull off a deal with bondholders to exchange $400 million of bonds for new, longer-dated debts. Those bonds were due to mature on Tuesday. Chief executives from half a dozen cryptocurrency firms will appear before Congress today as lawmakers wrestle with how to regulate the $2 trillion market. Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman Gary Gensler has likened crypto markets to the Wild West. He told the Journal yesterday that crypto companies should register with the SEC.
The crypto asset market needs more investor protection. Many of the tokens have been stood up to raise money from the public. That fits in our broad remit at the SEC.
For more, we are joined by finance reporter Julie Steinberg. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Thanks for being here. Julie, other countries around the world have moved to regulate cryptocurrencies. What's the industry said so far about regulation?
Well, so far, crypto platforms have tried to avoid running afoul of the Securities and Exchange Commission by only offering cryptocurrencies that they believe to be outside of the agency's remits. That is something that regulators are saying is no longer going to hold much water. And we know, for example, one of the CEOs of the exchanges that plans to testify today is going to say that they believe the existing structure under a different regulator, the CFTC, is the way to go. So we might see concessions in terms of acknowledging that some regulation is needed, but what format that regulation takes and what shape still remains to be seen.
Why are regulators so concerned about digital currencies?
So Gensler in particular has said that this is an area ripe for fraud and ripe for abuse, and it's really about investor protection and consumer protection. So they're concerned that without having oversight from regulatory bodies, you'll just have a lot of freedom for bad actors to flourish. And so that's why the SEC in particular wants to bring it under its regulatory umbrella.
Digital currencies are volatile by nature, and this week has been especially so for them. But now investors say Bitcoin and other tokens have a growing connection to traditional asset classes. What does that mean?
What it means is that originally this asset class was designed to be uncorrelated with others in the market. So people could flee into the safety of Bitcoin, as it were, when the rest of the market was having a tough time. But as we saw over the weekend, when Bitcoin's price fell more than 20%, trading as low as $42,000 at one point, some of that sell-off is actually due to some of the reasons we're seeing other asset classes sell off. And it's kind of the opposite of what was intended. The people who design Bitcoin and the people who trade it want to be insulated from the swings of a wild marketplace. But the fact that you're seeing it now start to move in tandem suggests a greater correlation and therefore less protection than investors might have originally sought.
Is that growing relationship and just the fact that they're actually testifying before Congress about regulation a sign that cryptos are becoming mainstream?
I think so, because more and more investors are pouring money into Bitcoin and putting money into other crypto forms and also putting money into crypto funds. So there's an acknowledgement that this is becoming a bigger and bigger part of investors' holdings and an acknowledgement that there needs to be more regulation by people in the industry.
That's Julie Steinberg. She covers finance for us. Thanks for your time.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me.
And coming up, ushering a new era in Germany as Olaf Scholz becomes chancellor. What changes are in store? That's after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Today marks a new era in Germany. For the last 16 years, Europe's biggest economy has been led by Angela Merkel. Her tenure coincided with those of U.S. Presidents Bush, Obama, Trump, and now Biden. But today, Olaf Scholz will be sworn in as Merkel's successor. To learn about who Scholz is and what might change in Germany on his watch, we are joined by our reporter in Berlin, Bojan Pinchevsky. Welcome back.
Hey, Peter. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. First, let's just start with the party affiliation. Scholz is a social democrat, a change from Merkel's more conservative Christian Democratic Union. How much of a political shift is he from Merkel?
Well, it would be a steady transition. You know, there's great continuity because he was Merkel's vice chancellor. It's important to note that his party was in a long-standing coalition government with Angela Merkel's conservatives. And they share many of the kind of key positions in foreign policy and so on. But it would be, I think, nevertheless, a substantial change because his party is naturally much more left-leaning, much more socially liberal, perhaps. And they're much more interested in expansive economic policy, fiscal policy. And to add to that, one of their coalition partners are the Greens, which is also a left-leaning party and also interested in many of the issues that were not top of the agenda during Angela Merkel. For example, I mean, what they did pretty much immediately is they introduced much more liberal legislation on same-sex couples, something that under Ms. Merkel was sort of relatively controversial. So yeah, there will be a kind of a left shift, definitely.
Scholz has vowed to overhaul Germany's economy. What does he have in mind?
Primarily, what they have in mind is transforming the German economy, which is Europe's biggest economy and is powered by Europe's biggest industry, transforming it to be decarbonized or less carbon intensive, stepping into developing newer technologies, you know, having their industrial giant rely on newer technologies. And for example, shifting the kind of backbone of the German economy, the car makers, and the government will do everything to support them in that endeavor. So predominantly what he means is that it's kind of closely connected to environmental concerns, to climate change concerns. And he also means digitization of the economy and the public administration. And for example, German government agencies, even in the midst of the pandemic, are communicating with each other with fax machines. And he wants to overhaul all that. He wants to digitize at least the public service to become much more lean and efficient. And I think the pandemic basically exposed the urgent need to do that.
And when it comes to the economy, Germany's relationship with Russia and China are really important. And at the same time, Scholz emphasized the transatlantic partnership with NATO when he presented the coalition deal on Tuesday.
einfinden in die Gemeinschaft der Demokratien, um die es uns auch geht.
He's basically saying it helps to connect countries who believe in freedom, democracy and human rights. So how does he go about balancing those international ties?
Well, first of all, there's always a very strong continuity in Germany's foreign policy and probably in the foreign policy of most countries. And Germany remains committed to the transatlantic alliance and to the European Union. So Scholz will very much continue with the policies of Ms. Merkel, and he will kind of the warm diplomatic tone between Washington and Berlin, and Berlin and other European capitals will continue, no doubt. The broader issue and the much more acute issue here is that there is a increasing rivalry between Beijing and Washington. And I think America, even under President Biden, is continuing the policy of President Trump of kind of pushing, perhaps less brutally, but still pushing European allies to make up their mind where they stand in this kind of global dispute between the two superpowers. And I think there is a consensus in Germany at a political level that the country can't afford to make that choice. And I believe that Mr. Scholz is a firm believer in that. I mean, he obviously stands for human rights. He stands for democracy. He stands for values. But then again, China is Germany's biggest trading partner. There is no way in the world that Germany could give up on that relationship, especially not at a time of crisis like this. During the term of Mr. Scholz, there will be a time where these differences will become much more apparent than before, and I don't think there's any helping that. And the second kind of burning geopolitical issue is that the United States is severely opposed to this new pipeline that's due to come online this month even. It's called the Nord Stream 2, and it will double Russia's direct exports of natural gas to Germany. Ms. Merkel was clinging on to this project despite global criticism, and I think Mr. Scholz will continue doing that because essentially Germany is starved for energy because it shut down its nuclear power plants and it basically needs these gas exports from Russia. So that will be a very critical point where probably Germany will face more criticism in the months to come from the United States and elsewhere, but it will hardly be able to change course on that particular policy.
Boyan, before I let you go, I am curious about how the German people are feeling. They have had one woman running the show for 16 years. It's been a really long time. How's it feel on the ground? What are people saying?
Well, that's very interesting because essentially you've got people who've grown up, you know, their entire adult lives, they remember nothing but one chancellor, Ms. Merkel. So, you know, opinions are divided. Some people are quite happy that finally there is a bit of a change at the top of German politics. Other people remember how well-liked and well-respected Ms. Merkel is across the world, across the globe. It's certainly an end of an era. Germany is at the cusp of a great change economically, politically, geopolitically, and all that will materialize with the new government. So it all depends on how Mr. Scholz manages his term. Political analysts have told me that it might well happen that Ms. Merkel's time in office is remembered as a kind of a golden age in German politics and the economy, or it could be the other way around. Depends on what happens next.
Boyan Pinchevsky, he's a reporter in the Berlin Bureau. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk, as always. Thanks.
And finally,
engine ignition. Turbo pumps coming up to flight speed. And liftoff. Liftoff of the Soyuz MS-20 with two Japanese spaceflight participants and a Russian cosmonaut now beginning their journey to the International Space Station.
Russia has relaunched its space tourism program after a 10-year break. That cosmonaut and two Japanese passengers took off from Kazakhstan about 2 a.m. Eastern time. They'll spend about 12 days at the ISS before returning to Earth. And that's what's news for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.